Psalm 90, a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn men back to dust, saying, "Return to dust, O sons of men." For 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. You sweep men away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning, though in the morning it springs up new, by evening it is dry and withered. We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. The length of our days is 70 years, or 80 if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For your wrath is as great as the fear that is due to you. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. And then turning to James, Chapter 4, verses 13 to 17. Now listen, you who say, "Today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money." Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, "If it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that." As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone, then, who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it, sins.
Well, good morning, everyone. Nice to see you all here this morning. I wonder how many of you would recognize this picture. This is Timothy McVeigh. Timothy McVeigh became known as the Oklahoma Bomber. Back in 1995, he planted a bomb which killed 149 adults and 19 children. He planted it in the federal building in Oklahoma City. He was tried, he was found guilty of the crime, and the 11th of June 2001, he was executed by lethal injection. And on the day the sentence was carried out, McVeigh left a handwritten statement quoting a poem by the English poet William Ernest Henley, ending with these lines: "I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." Now, how arrogant is that? What tragic folly to be put to death still insisting that you're in control of your life, that you're in control of everything. And as we go on in James's letter, James asks us to take a hard look at how we think about our lives and to what extent we set the agenda for our lives. So look at chapter 4 of James in verse 13. James says, "Now listen, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money.'" Well, nothing wrong with planning, nothing wrong with business, nothing wrong with making money, nothing sinful about these things in and of themselves, any more than planning for sitting that exam or planning to get that job or buy that house or whatever. Most of us have to make these sorts of plans, and there's nothing wrong with that. And James isn't condemning these things. He isn't condemning looking forward or having savings or insurance policies or pension schemes. That's not what James is on about. James is condemning the assumption that we can know everything about our future, the expectation that we can determine every detail of our lives, and the sort of planning that just leaves God out. That's what James is talking about. He's talking about those people who behave as if God wasn't important, or really who carry on as if God just wasn't there. We're not masters of our fate. We're not captains of our soul. That's God. Not us. God. So James starts off here saying, don't take this life for granted. Don't take this life for granted. We belong to a society that lives for the moment. An instant coffee, credit card, Facebook society. A society where tomorrow has pretty much become a dirty word. We want everything now. That's the sort of society we live in. We're focused on the now. If you're a Christian this morning, you're a citizen, not of this world, but a citizen of the world to come. Paul wrote in his letter to the Philippians, our citizenship is in heaven. But how easy it is in practice, in all the goings-on in this world, when push comes to shove, to actually be living for this present world, even as Christians. Now, all the verbs in verse 13 are future tense. James is talking about people who say, we will go, we will spend a year here or there, we will carry on business, we will make money, we will. See the assumptions. The assumptions that there will be a tomorrow for me, that I am going to travel safely, yes I am, and my business will be successful. Really? Says James. Really? How do you know that? Actually, James says, you don't know that at all. Don't take this life for granted, says James. It's short and it's uncertain. Don't take this life for granted. It's short and it's uncertain. What James wants us to recognize is the fragility of life. Look at verse 14. You're making all these plans for the year ahead, James says, but you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. How uncertain our lives are. How vulnerable we are. Listen to David in Psalm 39. Show me, O Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting is my life. You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is as nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath. How uncertain. See what your life is like? In the big scheme of things, David says, it's a mere handbreadth from here to here. It's a breath, and it's gone. Or listen to David in Psalm 103. As for a man, his days are like grass. He flourishes like a flower of the field. The wind blows over it, and it is gone, and its place remembers it no more. Wonder when was the last time you went to a funeral? It's a sobering experience, isn't it? All our earthly ambitions and plans basically end up in a 6-foot-long wooden box with brass handles. The wind blows over it, and it's gone, and its place remembers it no more. And quite honestly, we don't want to think like that, do we? We don't want to think about that. So, in Psalm 90, where we read, Moses actually writes this, the length of our days is 70 years, or 80 if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. The Old Testament word for mankind is Adam, the Hebrew word Adama. It means ground. It means the ground. Our English word human comes from the Latin humus, for the ground. So right back at the beginning in Genesis, after the man and woman sinned, God said, by the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you will return. That's where we end up as far as this life is concerned. But James wants us to think about it. And he asks us in verse 14, what is your life? What is your life? And he answers it, you are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. A couple of years ago, I was up in Scotland on holiday one summer. I was driving along the road and early one morning, and I saw the road going down into a valley and disappearing into this thick fog. So I put the headlights on and slowed down. But in the couple of minutes it took me to get down there, it had gone. Mist had disappeared, bright sunlight. That's what your life is like, says James. You live as if it's going to go on and on and on. You behave as if that must be the case. You assume you have the right to 70 or 80 years. But you don't. You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. You can make all sorts of plans. Plans to get married, plans to have a family, plans to have a nice house, a good job, plans to be successful and prosperous. But what does it take to bring it all to nothing? Something as tiny as a virus. Something as microscopic as a cancer cell. And whew, it's gone. All gone. Blown away. Life is fragile. Life is short. Life is uncertain. During the 25 years I worked as a doctor, one of the things I noticed was a change in the way people, their attitude to death. It used to be seen as something inevitable, something you just had to accept. Now more often people are looking for someone to blame. My husband should have gone to the doctor sooner. The doctor should have sent him to see the specialist sooner. The hospital didn't look after him properly. My husband shouldn't have died. Someone has got to take the blame. And sometimes there's some truth in some of these things. But the underlying assumption that death shouldn't happen, it's just mistaken, isn't it? Life is a mere handbreadth, just a breath. Well, that's the background, says James. That's the background against which we should be making our plans in this life. That's the perspective that we've largely lost in Western society. And I think it is a loss. Millions of people in the developing world are living precarious lives, but they're much wiser in some ways than we are. They see the reality. They're only too aware that this life is short and uncertain. Here's what the wise man in Proverbs wrote. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. They've grasped that, some people who live more precarious lives than us, lives nearer the breadline. Have we grasped that? I wonder if you ever read Coleridge Taylor's poem, The Ancient Mariner. We had to read that at school. And there are lines there that go like this. Like one that on a lonesome road doth walk in fear and dread, and having once turned round, walks on and turns no more his head, because he knows a frightful fiend doth close behind him tread. Mankind's greatest fear is death, like a frightful fiend sitting behind him. So we tend to pretend it's not going to happen. We refuse to think about it most of the time. So the very thing that should be making us look beyond death, beyond this life, our fear, paralyzes us, and we sort of bury our heads in the sand. Our natural instinct is not to think about how short this life is and not to think about death. We want to pretend it's not going to happen. We try to live our lives as if that wasn't our inevitable destination. The writer to the Hebrews talks about human beings being those who all their lives are held in slavery by their fear of death. In the modern Western world, we try to keep death a dark secret, don't we? People die in hospitals. People die in nursing homes. People die behind screens. People die out of sight. You know, if you want to buy a cheap house in England, find one that overlooks a cemetery. No one wants to be reminded of death. They're cheaper. It's a fact. Many years ago, when I was a junior doctor in Aberdeen, I had a good friend and colleague called Alan, and he was involved in offshore medicine. He used to fly backwards and forwards to the oil rigs, and Alan and I were quite close. We worked together in the hospital. We played squash every Tuesday evening. I played the organ at his wedding. He and his young wife, Kath, had all sorts of plans for the future, having a family, working overseas, all sorts of things. And then one night, he was on a helicopter on the way out to an oil rig in the North Sea, and the helicopter plunged into the sea, and all eight people on board were drowned. And all Alan's plans came to nothing. In a moment, without any warning, just like that. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. If you think this life is all you have, all you have to look forward to, then what else can you do but make your plans for this world and just hope for the best? The problem is, for most people in this world, they don't know where they're going. They don't know where they've come from. They don't know why they're here. They don't know where they're going. They're lost. Now, that's not you this morning, if you're a Christian, is it? That's not you. Surely, if you're a Christian, your perspective is very different. You've been created by God. You know where you came from. You belong to God. You're a Christian. You know who you are. And one day you're going to be with God. You know where you're going. As Christians, our hope finally is not in this world. Here's what the writer of the Hebrews wrote. Here we do not have an enduring city, but we are looking for the city that is to come. Here's the big difference between many unbelievers and Christians. Unbelievers are trying to control everything in this life. What else are they to do? They have no idea where they're going after this life ends. But believers, as Christians, we recognize the uncertainty of this life, but we're confident of where we're going after death, aren't we? So we can hand this life over to God. So James says, don't take this life for granted. It's short and it's uncertain. Depend on God. What else are you going to depend on? Nothing in this world is dependable. Nothing in this world is going to last. It's short, it's uncertain. What should I do? Depend on God. What should that look like? Well, look at verse 15. You ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. If it is the Lord's will. My parents' generation used to write DV on their letters. You heard of that? DV, Deo Volente, it stood for God willing. So they'd write, I'm going to have a new job, DV, God willing. We'll visit you in August, DV, God willing. Some people say that's a cop-out, but it's not. It's just Christian realism. We need to keep remembering that we depend on God for everything. Your life itself is given to you by God. Each day and each minute is given to you by God. Each breath, each heartbeat, existence itself, given to you by God. How easily we forget that. I think even as Christians, we forget that. We remember God when there's a crisis. We remember God when something big happens or something dreadful happens. But for quite a lot of the time, on many days, most of us, for most of what we're doing, can be as if God didn't care. We're just getting on with it with our heads down, as if God wasn't involved, as if God wasn't there. If we really believe our citizenship is in heaven, what are we doing living as if this world was our permanent home? Is that double-minded or what? The old spiritual says, "This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. My treasure is laid up somewhere beyond the blue." There's a guy called John Witherspoon in the States in the 18th century. He was one of the signatories to the original American Declaration of Independence, and he was president of a big college in New Jersey. And every day, he would drive a horse and trap 2 miles from his home to the college, and then 2 miles back home again in the evening. And one day, when he was at work in the college in his office, one of his neighbors burst in, and he said, Dr. Witherspoon, you must join me in giving great thanks to God for his extraordinary providence in saving my life. Because as I was driving, my horse ran away and the buggy smashed to pieces in the rocks, but I myself was unharmed. I escaped." And Witherspoon replied, "Oh, I can tell you a much more remarkable providence than that. I have driven that road hundreds of times. My horse never ran away. My buggy was never smashed. And I was never hurt." You see, God is at work in every circumstance, in every situation, and quite a lot of the time we just forget it. Verse 15 then says, "You ought to say, 'If it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that.'" Depend on God. That was the attitude of some of the early church leaders, wasn't it? Again and again. Listen to Paul. Paul leaving Ephesus. He says, "I will come back if it is the Lord's will." Paul writing to the Corinthians, "I will come to you soon if it is the Lord's will." Paul writing to the church in Rome, "I pray that now at last by God's will the way may be opened for me to come to you." Constantly, Paul was depending on God for all his activities and all his service. Well, do we? Do we? Do we commit to God our work and our leisure, and our relationships, and our career, and our travel, and our health, and anything else you can come up with? Do we? Do we commit all these things to God? Do we do them DV, God willing? Godliness means depending on God. Sin means making a bid for independence. We will go, we will spend a year, we will carry on business, we will make money, never mind God, that's what we're going to do. Remember the rich fool in Jesus' parable? The rich farmer, he had a bumper crop, and what did he say? He said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of good things. Take life easy and eat, drink, and be merry.'" And what did God say? "You fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you." I have a friend called Scott Murray who used to work in a mission hospital in Kenya in a place called Chogoria. And he used to write to me occasionally. This is years ago. He used to write to me and say what was happening and some of the challenges and so on of working in that way. And in one letter, he finished up with these words. He said, "It's good to know that we can make plans, but God is the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer." Now, that's exactly what James is trying to get us to see. Not that we should just sit back and do nothing, but that God is the CEO. So, we read again. "Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Nothing intrinsically wrong with any of these plans, but submit them to God. Recognize God's overruling sovereignty. God is the CEO." Verse 16, "As it is, you boast and brag. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." No, you're not. You're not. God is. So, Christian, you're a Christian here this morning. Don't say, "I worship God, but I want to run my own life." What are you really saying? "Jesus is Lord, but Jesus is not Lord." What's that? That's double-minded. All such boasting, says James, is evil. So don't take this life for granted. It's short and uncertain. Depend on God and get on with living for Him. It's so easy to put off serving God. It's so easy to say, "Well, I'll live for God when my circumstances in this life change," or heads down looking at this life, "when things are easier, when things are more stable, when I get promotion at work, when the kids sleep through the night, when the kids leave home, when I retire, whatever, at the right time. But in the meantime, I'll go to this or that city, I'll spend a year there, I'll carry on business, I'll make money, never mind God." Keep your eyes fixed on your goal. Keep your eyes focused on heaven. Keep your eyes glued to eternity. In 1952, there was a young woman called Florence Chadwick who stepped off the beach at Catalina Island in California, into the water, determined to swim across to the mainland of California. She was already an experienced long-distance swimmer. She'd been the first woman to swim the English Channel in both directions. And then the day she set out, the weather was cold and foggy, and she could scarcely see the boats that accompanied her. And for 15 hours, she swam. And she begged to be taken out, and her trainer urged her to persist, telling her again and again that she could make it and the shore wasn't far away. But eventually, physically and emotionally exhausted, finally she just gave up. She stopped swimming. She was pulled out and the boats made for the shore, and she discovered she was a mere half a mile away. And the next day she gave a news conference. And this is what she said. She said, "I don't want to make excuses for myself. I'm the one who asked to be pulled out, but I think if I could have seen the shore, I would have made it." And 2 months later, she proved her point. On a bright, clear day, she plunged back into the sea and she swam the distance. So look, don't take this life for granted. It's short and uncertain. Depend on God. Fix your eyes on the shore. Remember who you are. Remember where you're going. And get on with living for God now. You don't know how long you've got to do that. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Let me finish with some lines that you can find etched into the wall in Chester Cathedral. Here's what it says. "As a child, I laughed and wept, and time crept. As a youth I played and talked, and time walked. As I grew into a man, time ran. Later, as I onward grew, time flew. Soon I shall find, while travelling on, time gone. Don't take this life for granted. Don't. It's short, it's uncertain, you don't know what's going to happen. Depend on God. He never changes. Depend on God and get on with living for Him. Whatever situation you're in, wherever you are, wherever you live, whatever job you do, whatever's going on, get on with living for God now. God's the only thing, the only person, nothing else you can depend on but God. Get on with living for Him now. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, how we thank You that You are unchanging. We've sung about that this morning. Everlasting God, You never change. Yesterday, today, and forever, You are the same. You never change. Help us to cling on to You. Help us to fix our eyes on the shore. Help us to live this life with our eyes on the life to come. Forgive us when we get our heads down and get so busy and leave You out. When we say Jesus is Lord and live as if Jesus was not Lord, that we were captains of our own souls. Help us to have a proper humility and to fix our eyes on our everlasting citizenship in heaven and to get on with serving You, whatever's happening now, for Your glory. Amen.